I'm very happy to see many of the students with their textbooks. I mean, the regular ones, the visitors, obviously. This is very nice. I'm very happy, and Krishna will bless you because it's a heavy book to carry around. I remember when I was in medical school, I went to medical school, I had to carry this. We didn't have computers in those days. I had a suitcase with 40 kilos of books. Gray's Anatomy, there's a book, if you're a doctor, Gray's Anatomy, and it's art paper, it's not regular, it's art paper this thick. So art paper means that glossy paper. It's this thick. The book itself weighed 10 kilos. Then Guyton's Physiology and Tabor's Medical Encyclopedia and all these things. I had a look. Any doctors here? Are there any doctors in the audience? No. But all these are must books that, you know. So I thought, and then later I looked back and I said, oh, this is Krishna's mercy. Krishna was training me to develop very strong shoulders because I would join ISKCON and carry 40 kilos of Bhagavad Gitas on my shoulder to distribute to the public. Every day for 6 years, 8 hours a day, every single day, even 7 days a week, I would go out every single day to the Los Angeles airport or San Francisco airport or New York airport and meet 300 people a day for 6 years. I would meet 300 people a day and sell 25 to 30 Gitas. So one out of every 10 people would even, you know, consider it. Not bad, 10%. Oh, my Lord, Queen Kunti said, oh, Prabhu, oh, my Lord, you have executed all your duties yourself. Sva grite hita, Prabhu. Are you leaving us today, though we are completely dependent upon you, on your mercy? We have no one else to protect us but you, my Lord. Now, when all the kings are at enmity with us. So let's understand the Kaladesha Patra. It's 5,000 years ago, 5,211 years or something. And this is, where's the setting? That's the time, Kaladesha Patra. Where's the setting? Where's the place? So where are we? We're in Meerut, or what was called Hastinapur in those days, which I think is called Meerut. Is it right? It's about 20, 30, 40 kilometers outside of what present-day Delhi. Is it correct? There was Indraprastha, where the Kauravas lived, Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana, and there was Hastinapur, where the Pandavas lived. And I believe that was about 40 kilometers, or wherever Meerut is. Meerut? Meerut. This was the actual original location of the historic and factual kingdom, the palace of Yudhisthira and the Pandavas. So now, the Kurukshetra war is over, and the Pandavas have won the war. Yudhisthira has been installed as the emperor of the world, the Samrat, Jagat, or what do you say, Bhu Samrat, the emperor of the world. And Krishna, of course, he was there during the Kurukshetra for 18 days, and he stayed for a few months afterwards. Why? Because he likes to be with his lovers. We like to stay with our dear ones. We don't like to be far from our dear ones. We want to be near our dear ones, near and dear. And it's painful to be separated from those you love. So the Pandavas love Krishna. They're in Vatsalya Bhav and Sakya Bhav. Of course, obviously, Dasya is there. But their primary relationship is friendship and motherly relationship. Kunti, Queen Kunti, is speaking. She's the mother of the Pandavas, as you well know. And Kunti Rani is very much in love with Krishna. She loves him as her own son, or even more than her own son. It's called Vatsalya, the affection of a mother or father, parental love. And so when you're with your, not only does she love him as a son, but she understands his godhood. She's a tattva-gyani. She's a tattva-gyani and a rasika. She's a rasika Vaishnava and a tattva-gyani. This is Krishna Leela. Bhagavan Bhakta Sambandha, Prem Sambandha, Leela. This is love. We're hearing about, this is love, and love means action. Love means feelings. Love means exchanges, intimacy. Someone surrenders. Someone dominates. Someone receives. But everyone dominates. Love dominates all. The woman dominates the husband by her love. The husband dominates the wife by his love. Krishna dominates and controls his devotees by his love. And the devotee dominates and controls the Lord by his love, and basically that's the essence of the verse. But Queen Kunti, she is a rasika. She relishes ras, the sweet taste of intimate divine love in relationship with Krishna. And he's been there for a few months, but his wives are sending him messages every day on the cell phone. Rukmini and Satyabhama and Mitravinda and Kalindi and Satya and Jambavati and Satyabhama, they're all sending messages. Pati, come home. Oh, our beloved husband, oh Prabhu. Prabhu, please return to Dwaraka. Have you forgotten us? And moreover, the queens are very afraid. They're not so afraid about Krishna being in Hastinapur, but they're afraid of the proximity of Vrindavan. Vrindavan is very, very close to Delhi, Mathura, Vrindavan, as you all well know. It's about 3 hours away by car, and about, well, Krishna's car goes at the speed of mind, mano retena. So his chariot can get there even faster. If he wants to jump on his chariot and go to Vrindavan and meet the gopis, then the queens of the Mahishis of Dwarka are absolutely, totally finished, as Krishna will never return. So they're repeatedly and incessantly sending messengers and Brahmins and other birds, etc., with messages tied around their legs. Because original courier services in those days were birds. They would tie messages around their legs. For example, you have a driver and you have a car, and sometimes you have some work, and you even maybe if you have a trusted driver, he can carry money across town and things like that. Take this 2 lakhs and make this payment. You understand? Or they carry messages, so courier or even your personal driver, your personal car, your personal driver. So Krishna has in Dwarka, Krishna has a very wonderful car, a chariot and a chariot of sarati named Daruka, but also serving him if he wants to, because Dwarkadish exhibits forearms when he's in Aishwarya Mahi Bhagavan mood, Chaturbhuj Rup. And Dwarkadish generally exhibits 2 arms. Interesting sight to meditate on is that Dwarkadish Sri Krishna, when he's in the palaces enjoying with his individual queens, there are 16,000 different Krishnas. And they're enjoying and having bihar and exchanges with 16,108 different queens and 16,108 different palaces. And at that time, in those places, with those queens and those devotees, Krishna's exhibiting 2 arms. And then when he comes out, this is described in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, when all those Krishnas come out in the morning to go to work, because even the prime minister has to go to work, yes? He doesn't lie around in his house all day. He has to go to the parliament or to his house or wherever he goes somewhere and conduct his affairs of state. So in the morning, every morning, Krishna comes out and proceeds and walks to, he actually walks because his palaces are very near. He walks to the Sudharma Assembly House, which I think you've heard of. It's the Raja Sabha. It's not the Vaishnava exactly. Well, it is that also. But it's called Raja Sabha. Like you say Ram Dabar or something, Ram Dabar. It's Raja Sabha. This is the assembly of all the Rajas and kings and princes and ministers running and managing Dwarkadham. So all those Krishnas that come out of the palaces have 2 arms. And when they come on the street, they all merge together and become one Krishna. Then he exhibits 4 arms. And that Krishna enters the Sudharma Assembly House with exhibiting 4 arms. Because when he's ruling as king and as the Lord of Dwarka, generally he exhibits 4 arms. I think you must have seen paintings with Dwarkadish with 4 arms. Krishna never exhibits 4 arms because it disrupts the intimacy and the confidentiality and the human-like pastimes of Vrindavan, the sweet pastoral setting. There is no Aishwarya, let's say obvious Aishwarya in Vrindavan. So now Krishna is there, and he wants to return. I don't know if he wants to. He wants to also return because he has 1,60,000 children that are crying for him. In Dwarka, Krishna had 10 sons with every queen and one daughter. So he actually has 160,000 plus another 16,000. He has about 180,000 children. Not bad, huh? And you have trouble maintaining one or two. Oh, it's so expensive. Wife says, I want another child. Husband says, forget it. Got the business over. Krishna is the all-accommodating God. He can love and give love to anyone. He can have unlimited girlfriends, unlimited wives, unlimited friends. Ram is limited. Vishnu is limited. Does Ram have Raslila? Does Ram have Makanchor Lila? Does Ram have Jal Krita, water pastimes? Does Jal have? Does Ram have Nokabihar? Does Ram have Banbihar? No. The answer is no. Does Vishnu have a mother? No. So there's no Vatsalya Vav. Does he have any girlfriends? No. So there's no Parakiya Bhav. Krishna is the everything God. Everything goes. Because that's the ultimate issue. The ultimate form of Godhead has to have everything. No, nothing lacking. Oh, I can have girlfriends, but God can't. It's immoral if God has a girlfriend. Why? You're a God. You're establishing yourself. You're establishing what is moral and what is immoral. So Krishna has responsibilities in Dwarka. But Queen Kunti is trying to appeal to him. She's saying, first of all, I love you. You're my son and I can't bear to be without you. Please don't go. And Krishna's thinking, I've already been here for 2 months. Or three. And then she's trying to appeal to his sense of honor and sense of chivalry. And since he's Gopal, he's the Raksha, he's the protector of his devotees. The Palana, the protector and the maintainer. So she says, listen, all right, the battle of Kurukshetra is over. And by your blessings, by your guidance, by your presence, we are victorious. Because your name is Ajit. Ajit. Ajit Sri Krishna ki? Jai. Ajit. No one defeats him. No one conquers Krishna. So by your glance and by your grace, we were successful, and the Pandavas were victorious, and my son became the emperor, Yudhisthira. And we rejoiced over the victory. We received our kingdom back and our palace. But still, there's so many envious people out there. This is what the verse is telling us. His last word says, amhasam. That means irsya. There's so many envious people out there. Then someone may argue, wait a minute. Who's the envious? Who are the envious kings? You killed them all. Dhritarashtra's, everyone, and Duryodhana, everyone's finished. Duryodhana died, everyone died. All the Kauravas died except Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. They were all killed. So where are the envious kings? The envious kings that all died have sons. Yuvaraj, and they're also very envious. And not only envious, another quality kings have, or at least low quality kings have, is revenge. You did this to me? You stole my queen? Now see what I do to you. Attack! The kingdom. And then you fight. So revenge. Tit for tat. Kings have that nature. Hey, you do this to me, I do double to you in return. Teach you a lesson. So all these sons who lost their fathers, obviously they're not too happy about it. That's an obvious response to such an event. And what do they want to do? They want to seek revenge to please their forefathers. So let us attack the Pandavas and defeat them. Our fathers were a little weak and old and they got defeated, but we're young. Because you know when you're young, you're ridiculously proud. And when you're young, you're ridiculously confident. Hey, I can do anything, man. Watch out. My father, he was defeated by Bhima. I can defeat Bhima. Who is this Bhima? Old man, Pandavas, ha ha ha. Look at these muscles. I'm taking protein powder, lifting weights, going to the gym. I'm in training. I have six packs. Packs or pecs, whatever it is, pecs. Whatever they are. Bulging muscles. Somewhere. You can just imagine. Such a hero. So they're confident, they're cocky, they're proud. Every young person is confident, cocky, and proud. But this is the nature. So then Kunti's wise. She's a Rajani, she's a Rani. She knows politics. Danda Samaveda Danda. She knows that this is the nature. So she says, please, stay on because we want to serve you, and we want to associate with you and be with you. And not only that, we need your protection. We are dependent on you. Only because of you we won the war. Only because of you we're living so wonderfully and comfortably. Only because of you, you're our everything. So Krishna, of course, he's listening to these prayers, and then the prayers progress, and you'll be studying. I guess we'll be studying them tomorrow. So this will continue. So I'll read this purport by Srila Prabhupada. He further elaborates on the theme that is being indicated here. Basically, what she's saying is, she's saying, oh my Lord, please stay. Why should you stay? Because we love you more than any other devotees. We can serve you better than your queens in Dwarka. And we love you more than your own children. This is the bhav. This is the mamata bhav. Because if that's not there, then one is not a true bhakta. What you say, bhakta. One should feel that I love Krishna more than anybody. I love Krishna more. Oh, my love for Krishna is better than Radharani's. Of course it isn't. It never will be. It never can be. But the devotee feels that, oh, why do you want to go to your queens and sons? We can serve you better. We can love you better. Why do you want to go there? This is a natural bhav. Why? Our love is not genuine? The same dialogue and the same psychology is revealed in the Vrindavan Leela. When the gopis are in Viraha, when they're feeling separation and Krishna is in Mathura. After Akrura took Krishna and Balaram to Mathura, the gopis were lamenting and crying out to each other, our love is not genuine. Why he left us? If he really loved us, if our love was genuine and really so exalted and he was so attached to us and so much in love, how could he leave us? How could he go to Mathura? Is he attracted to the ladies of Mathura? The Mathura Kanyas, the virgin girls of Mathura, or the Mathura Ramanis? The term is used, Mathura Ramani. The young, loving, beautiful ladies of the city. He wants to go and be with the high fashion Delhi girls. He doesn't like the UP village girls. He likes the high fashion, poetic, soft, sophisticated speech of the city. People in the city say, excuse me, may I help you? How are you? Hello. They speak very nice. But in the city, hey, kyakare! In the village, they speak what seems to be rough. Rough talk. Hey, what are you doing? What's happening? Hey, when you go to the city, excuse me, what are you doing, sir? It's very refined and cultured speech, and that's Mathura. In Vrindavan, they're abhiras, they're coward people. In Mathura, they're all baniyas and kshatriyas and brahmins, chobe brahmins. It's not some village. It's not. They're nomads, abhira. Abhira, A-B-H-I-R-A, is a particular class of vaishyas. They don't plant any crops. They don't harvest gehon and chickpeas and all these things. They don't plow the fields of bullocks. They simply take care of cows. Like you see these Rajasthani, what we call nomads, or gypsies they call in America. They have goats, especially they have goats, and they wander all around North India here and there in different seasons, and they catch leaves and they feed them to the goats. And they just have some camels with their tents and belongings on the back of a camel or some little cart they have. And they just move here and there with their animals. You've seen. Have you not seen? I've seen. So Nanda Maharaj and Krishna were the same way. They were nomadic people. Their grandparents, great-grandparents established a palace in Nandagram, but that was because there was very good pasturing grounds there and very good grass for the cows. So they had some somewhat permanent settlement there. But then when the grass diminishes, then they pack up the cows and move. So they moved to, well, firstly, they were in Nandagram, and then they moved to Gokul. His ancestors moved to Gokul. Nanda Maharaj's ancestors moved to Gokul because of the Keshi demon. The Keshi demon was one of the first demons to harass the Brijvasis and one of the last. If you know the pastimes of Krishna Vrindavan, Keshi demon is one of the last demons that Krishna killed in Vrindavan in terms of the sequence. I think he was the last, Keshi, maybe. And then after that, Akura came. So Keshi was such a ferocious rakshas and demon that he's a huge horse, appearing like a horse, but he ate human beings. Just like these, they have lizards today. They have these lizards that are kind of small, iguana. They're called iguana in different tropical islands. The lizard is about 6 feet long. They don't eat human beings, but they're huge. Like you have these chipcullies, little guys that go here and there. So they're little. But, you know, millions of years ago, they were 20, 50 feet long. You know, things get larger and smaller with the influence of time and radiation and all these different things, mutations and radiation. So the Keshi was a man-eating horse. So he was attacking Nandagram before Krishna was even born. This is in Garga Samhita and other places. So because of that, we hear that Krishna appeared in Gokul, the Vrindavan Krishna. There's two Krishnas, one in Gokul appeared and one in Mathura in the prison house. Devaki and Vasudeva were the mother of Devaki Nandan, Yashoda and Nandan. It's all explained in the Bhagavatam and all our commentaries, and I won't go into that now. But then Keshi was harassing Parjanya and the other, so they moved to Gokul because there's nice grass there. Then they were there for some time. Krishna was born. He lived there 3 years and 7 months. And then there was some demons coming there to kill Krishna, sent by Kamsa, Putana, Trinavarta, Shakatasura, primarily. And then the relatives said, well, these demons are harassing our son, and they did some investigation. They said, we found some very nice pastures in Vrindavan and Chatikar area. Lots of grass there. Let's go there. So they packed up their wagons, they crossed the Yamuna. It's a very beautiful description in Ananda Vrindavan Champu. If you haven't read this book, then you're crazy. It's such a beautiful book, Ananda Vrindavan Champu. And myself, I published this book. It was a Sanskrit classic written 500 years ago by an eternal associate of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya, Padakarta Pandit Kavi Karnapur. And it's such a beautiful book. Of course, the Sanskrit is unbelievable, what little bit I could appreciate of it. And my godbrothers, Subhag Swami and Banu Swami, on my behest, and we worked together, they translated it, and I spent a long time editing it. It's available in English. They probably have it here. They have it here. This is not a promotional class, but if you're interested in Krishna and Radha and the Cowherd Boys, and Yashoda, and you want to know what is Ras, and what is love, and what is bhakti, this book is a must. It's so poetic and so beautiful. If you understand English, if Hindi is your reading language, then it's also actually in Hindi. It's available in Vrindavan in some of the Hindi bookstores, and possibly at Radha Damodar Mandir. It's called Anand. You say Anand? Anand. Anand Vrindavan Champu. It's in Hindi with elaborate commentaries. It's a big fat book also. It's available in Kande Lal and other Hindi bookstores around Banki Bihari area there. I guarantee if you read this book twice, and if you are a human being, and if you read this book cover to cover twice, you will start crying for Krishna. I guarantee. That's my challenge. So, you know, if you want, that's my that's a term in science, axiom or something. You have to prove it now. So now, Now if you want to prove me right or wrong, you the onus of proof is on you. You have to actually read. You have to be. Are you a human being? It appears so. I hope so. But that means also qualities. And then if you are, or we are human beings, and we read Ananda Vrindavan Champu word to word, chapter to chapter, twice, attentively, not sleeping through half of it, attentively, in the early morning after you've rested properly, slowly, slowly, 1 or 2 years or 6 months or whatever your thirst is, and then you come back and say, I read it, and I didn't cry even an alligator tear. Even an alligator tear didn't fall. Then I say, all right, give me the book back. Here's your 250 rupees. It costs a staggering 250 rupees for a 400-page book, hardbound. Extremely cheap price. We're giving you gold for peanuts. You give us 2 peanuts, we'll give you 1 kilo of gold. All right? Good deal. Do mongfali dedo. 8 kilo sona lelo. Is it something like that? The purport. The verse is about Kunti, and it's personal. Everything's personal. These are sections of dialogues happening in a movie or a drama. It's a play. It's a drama. It's lila. It's now time. It's eternal time on some planet. This is happening. It's dramatic. No, it's drama. Lila means drama, action, love, exchange, pathos, crying, laughing, this, that. So it's not just a verse floating on a piece of paper. She's looking at Krishna. Krishna, the camera's there on Kunti's face, and she's so much petition, so much mood of begging. And then the camera zooms in on Kunti's face, Kunti Rani's face. Then another camera pans out, another camera zooms in on Krishna as he's listening to it, as he's listening to her and looking at her. Then the third camera looks at both of them, sees both of them together. He's sitting maybe on a seat, and she's also on a seat because she's much senior to him. Queen Kunti is much older than Krishna. So she's the Rani. She's the mother of the Pandavas. So she's in an elevated seat. She's not kneeling at the floor. So they're both sitting in some type of asana or seats and looking at each other. And so then she's appealing to him. It's just like you imagine a wife appealing to him. Please don't go to China. Why do you have to go to China for business? Just do business in Delhi. Oh, I'm going for 2 months to China. Huh? 2 months? Please don't go. And if you go, what's going to happen to us? Who will protect us? Who will protect us? So that's what she's looking at. Krishna, and you, it's like a mother, the son is saying, Mother, I've lived with you for 25 years, but now I have my degree and I have a job in New York. I'm going. Oh, please, don't. Oh, my son, don't go. Why do you have to go? And if you go, who will take care of me? Oh, you're, because she's maybe a widow, maybe her husband, the son's father died early. But you're going. No, mother, don't worry. Your brother is there, and I'll send money. I'll send so much money. No, I don't care about. I want you to stay. So it's so much. It's touching. If we're touchable. If we are touchable, the Shastras touch our mind and hearts. If we're untouchables, as you know about in India, the untouchables or something like that, Mahajans or whatever, Harijans, what do they call them? Harijans. Harijans, the untouchables. But we are also untouchables. The Shastra, we read the Shastra, we hear the Shastra, and it doesn't touch us. Touching means effect. It doesn't affect us. It doesn't alter us, it doesn't move us, it doesn't change us, because we're untouchable. We're so densely covered with pride and envy and greed that we can't hear the Shastra, we can't feel the Shastra, we can't see the Shastra, and we can't realize the Shastra. Shastras are Krishna. This is Krishna Sarup. All the Mahajanacharyas are saying, Srimad Bhagavatam is Swayam Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna Sarupe. Swayam Shakti, Sarva Shakti Mayi Radha Hai. The Bhagavatam is Radha Krishna Yugal Sarup. Do we see Radha and Krishna in the verses of the Bhagavatam? Do we feel their benign association and sweet love coming, pouring out and gushing out of every verse of the Bhagavatam? Do we have darshan of them in each and every lila? Kunti is an aspect of Radharani. Dwarkadish is an aspect of Krishna, because Kunti is Shakti. So as one goes higher in consciousness and higher in realization from Gyan to Vigyan, and from Bhakti to Bhav, and from Bhav to Prem, the Premi Bhakta, who is a Vigyani, situated in Vishuddha Sattva, he sees Radha and Krishna in every single verse of the Bhagavatam. Sees them, touches them, because he's not untouchable. Because his heart has become a Sparshamani. His heart has become whatever he sees Radha and Krishna. Sparshamani, touch stone, was the philosopher's stone, was some type of stone. It doesn't exist now, but it did, at least we believe that, the Shastras describe. That particular stone, if you would touch a piece of iron, loha, with that stone, loha sparsha, then that iron would transform into sona, gold. So we think, unbelievable, it's mythology. Well, it's not so hard to understand. You take some metal, and then you touch it to a magnet, and then that power of the magnet of the chumbak becomes transferred. You have a magnet, and you put a preg driver, screwdriver, you rub it on there for a little while, and you take it off, and now you take the screwdriver, you know, this thing, you know, tool, and touch some little screws, then it picks them up, because the magnetic power has been transferred. So the Sparshamani has some type of power to transfer and transform iron into gold. So when the Krishna and Radha sit in the heart becomes a Sparshamani. So then when he sees a verse, he transforms the Sanskrit and the shloka into Radha and Krishna, because they're there. So this is a very touching scene. She's begging him. She's actually begging. When a woman begs a man to do something with tears in her eyes, it's very difficult for that man to say no, isn't it? Just imagine your mother is looking at you, and she's crying, and her voice is cracking. Oh, please, why do you have to go to Vrindavan? Please stay. Please, we need you here. We have to... forget it, Mom, I'm going. If you're American, you can do that. If you're Indian, you say, all right, Mom, I'll go later, next month, or I'll think of something. Okay, I'm staying. Isn't it? This is the play of love. This is the flow of love. Love makes one surrender to the beloved. So when we love God, we surrender to God. And as God loves us, He surrenders to us. Because we love God, we surrender to Him. We surrender so much, we become absolute slaves of God. And God loves His devotees so much that He surrenders to them to such an extent that God becomes a slave of His devotees. This is unbelievable, but this is a fact. So she's crying, and so what happens is that Krishna, He tells her, He says, I really have to go. And then you'll see as it progresses, then Yudhisthira comes on the scene. Kunti's, I believe, eldest son is King Yudhisthira. Now, Yudhisthira comes on the scene, we'll hear in the next few verses, and he meets Krishna, and he has tears in his eyes. But his relationship with Krishna, his relationship is of Sakya, like a friend. Yudhisthira is also older than Krishna, and he's like a senior brother. Like a brother. And then he'll say, please, you stay. And then already being prepared by meeting Kunti, and his heart was already pre-softened, although he didn't agree to Kunti's proposal initially. He didn't say, Bhavatu, yes, I'll stay. He said, no, I must go. And then he was thinking, actually, I should stay. I must go, but he's thinking and feeling I should stay, but he's telling her. And so then he meets Yudhisthira also says, please stay. And then Krishna agrees. So he stays a little longer. So this is the basic setting. So in this verse, he's saying, please stay, we need you. Why do we need you? Because the sons, the enemy kings that are, they're still around there, there's lots of envious kings, and they're very powerful, they're all on all sides of us. And they want revenge against my children. So they can attack us at any time. And I don't think my children, they're tired, they've worked so hard, they fought so hard. I don't think the Pandavas, I don't think they can be successful again. So please you stay here to ensure our safety. So basically what Queen Kunti is saying, I am not independent of you, my Lord. I cannot depend just on my Panch Pandavas, although they're so invincible. Gandivadara, Arjun, and Bhima. I cannot depend on them. My dependence is with you. I'm dependent on you. And I'm depending on you to stay here and protect me and all of us because I'm your devotee. A devotee surrenders to the Lord. Whoever you surrender to, then you depend on them, isn't it? The wife surrenders to the husband. She depends on him to love her, to please her, to protect her, to provide for her. Isn't it? So the children surrender to their teacher and they expect to receive in return guidance and even some type of protection in one sense, but mostly guidance and education, knowledge. So Queen Kunti is a Param Bhakta. She's a supreme Premi Bhakta of Krishna. And she's dependent on the Lord. So the basic theme of the verse in terms of philosophy, in terms of the spiritual quality that's being expressed here is that I am like your mother. I love you like a mother. You're like my son. That's one level. But I also, that's the Madhurya intimate Nara Leela. You're my son. I'm your mother. I'm another mother of yours. And I love you like a son. So that's the Madhurya Nara Leela aspect. But now we go to the Aishwarya consideration. Because she knows, Queen Kunti knows very clearly, although she feels and relates as a mother and loves like a mother, she knows in her mind, her heart is like a mother, but her mind is fully cognizant and understanding that this personality, Swayam, is Krishna, is actually Swayam Bhagavan. He is Sarvakarna Karanam. He is the cause of all causes. He is the supreme controller, the supreme creator. He is God. She knows that fully. So on this level, she's relating, on the first part of the verse, she's saying, please stay. And then she's revealing, she's saying, because you are God, and I am your devotee, I am your surrendered Premi Bhakta, I depend on you to protect me. You are my Prem Vishaya, I am the Prem Ashraya, I am the shelter of love, but you are my object of love. So when the shelter of love in a marriage is the wife, and the object of love is the husband, so he protects her. So another level, she's praying as a devotee, that and a true devotee always feels dependence on the Lord. There's no independence. He is Ekale Ishvara Krishna Ara Sabya Britya. Britya means servant. Ekale Ishvara Krishna. There is one Ekale Ishvara. Ek Ishvara. Krishna, Bhagavan, is the supreme independent controller of everything and everyone. That is a fact. And then the other verse is described in Katak Upanishad. It says, Nityo Nityananam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Yo Vidadati Kaman. So there in that verse, the Rishi Acharyas, Mahajan Acharyas, in Katak Upanishads, are telling Nityo Nityananam Chaitanas Chaitananam. There is one eternal supreme consciousness. I am eternal consciousness, nitya. Nityo nityananam chaitanas chaitananam. Hayachitta, consciousness. I am an eternally conscious particle, atma, jivatma. And there's another supremely eternal consciousness, the eternal unlimited consciousness, vibho, or vibhuchit, is God, Bhagavan, Ram, Vishnu, Krishna. And I am anuchit. I am eternal, yes. I am conscious, yes. I am Chaitanam, or Chitta. But Nityo Nityananam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Yovidadati Kaman. Eko Bahunam Yovidadati Kaman. Vidadati Kaman, Vidadati means he gives. There's one Eko Bahunam. There is one, that one person, that one supreme consciousness, that one supreme entity, Vibhu Chaitanya, God, Bhagavan, Eko Bahunam Yovidadati Kaman. Bahu means many. That one independent Lord is supplying all the needs and providing all the necessities and giving all the protection, food and shelter and everything for the many. That one Supreme Consciousness, God, is supplying and fulfilling the desires. Eko bahunam yo vididati kaman. Kaman means wish, desire, wants. Vididati. It's almost like da dadati. In Hindi, you say dan, dati, da. So that means vishesh dan. Then in a very special and individual and unique and wonderful way, vi dadati, Bhagavan Sri Krishna supplies the needs and food and shelter and water for every single living entity, from the ant to the elephant. From the chinti. From the chinti to the hasti. Hati. The ant to the elephant. And everyone in between, which is us, he's supplying everything. Yoga kshemam baham yaham. So this is a basic theme. It's about dependence. And we'll just read through the purport and close the class there. The Pandavas are most fortunate because with all good luck, they were entirely dependent on Lord Sri Krishna. In the material world, to be dependent on the mercy of someone else is the utmost sign of misfortune. In Chanakya Pandit, Niti Shastra, the book of rules, Niti means rules, I believe. Niti Shastra, the book of rules, he says, dependence on another's mercy is a source of misery. If you depend on the mercy of someone in this material world, you'll be miserable at one time of life or another. Therefore, sadhakas and niskinshan sadhus, they try as much as possible not to depend on anyone's mercy. But ultimately, of course, we cannot live without dependence. We're dependent on God for water. We're dependent on God for food and dependent on God to maintain and make our body work and make the muscles and digest and everything. Jataragni, and there's so many devas living within this body and the super soul. So that's what is being pointed out here. In the material world, to be dependent is misfortune. But in the case of our transcendental relationship with Lord Sri Krishna, it is the most fortunate case. We are considered Mahabhagya when we can live completely dependent on Krishna. The material disease is due to thinking of becoming independent of everything. But the cruel material nature does not allow us to become independent. The false attempt to become independent of the stringent laws of nature is known as material advancement of experimental knowledge. The whole material world is moving on this false attempt of becoming independent of the laws of nature. Beginning from Ravan, who wanted to prepare a direct staircase to the planets of heaven, down to the present age, wherein they are trying to overcome the laws of nature. They are trying now to approach distant planetary systems by electronic mechanical power. I mean satellites, spaceships, and all that. But the highest goal of human civilization is to work hard under the guidance of the Lord and become completely dependent on Him. So it's not that we don't become parasites. The highest achievement of perfect civilization is to work with valor. Work with valor. No lazy men, no loafers. Work with valor means virtue, strength. But at the same time, depend completely on the Lord. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mamanusmar yudhyacha. Krishna told Arjuna, fight, but remember me. Work, but remember God. Listen. The Pandavas were the ideal executors of this standard of civilization. In other words, a standard of civilization where people do their work, do their dharma, but depend on God and serve God with every moment. That is the standard of human civilization. Undoubtedly, the Pandavas were completely dependent on the goodwill of Lord Sri Krishna, but they were not idle parasites of the Lord. They were all highly qualified both by personal character and by physical activities. In other words, they had all good behavior and they were strong and powerful and worked hard. They weren't lazy fellows. Still, they always looked for the mercy of the Lord because they knew, the Pandavas knew, every living being is dependent by constitutional position. The perfection of life is, therefore, to become dependent on the will of the Lord instead of becoming falsely independent in the material world. Those who try to become falsely independent of the Lord are called anath, anath, or without any guardian or Lord, Master. Whereas those who have completely dependent on the will of the Lord are called sanath, means with the Lord, with the Master. They have those that have someone to protect them. Therefore, we must try to be sanath, so that we can always be protected from the unfavorable condition of material existence. By the deluding power of the external material nature, which means Maya, we forget that the material condition of life is the most undesirable perplexity. The Bhagavad Gita therefore directs us in 7:19, Bahunam Janmanam Ante, Gyanavam Mam Prapadyante, that after many, many births, one fortunate person becomes aware of the fact that God, Vasudev, is all in all, and that the best way of leading one's life is to surrender to God completely. That is the sign of a great soul, a realized spiritual person, a Mahatma. All the members of the Pandava family were Mahatmas in household life. So they were Grihastha Mahatmas. You don't have to be Sannyasi, Babaji, Vairagi to be a Mahatma. You heard of Mahatma Gandhi? Yes? He was a Grihastha, yes? So they're Grihasthas. And the Tika is saying they're Mahatmas. And Queen Kunti was the mother of these Mahatmas. The lessons of Bhagavad Gita and the lessons of all the Pandavas, specifically in the Bhagavad Puran, are therefore inevitably connected with the history of the Pandava Mahatmas. Oh, the Pandava Mahatmas. For the Pandavas, separation from Lord Krishna was just like the separation of a fish from water. If you take a fish out of the water and put him on the land, what will happen? He will die. So if you take the bhakta away from his Lord, he will die. Dry up, shrivel up, suffocate. So they feel like if Lord leaves them, of course he never leaves the devotee because he always lives in the mind and heart of the devotee. If you love someone, that person never leaves you no matter where they are, right? So because love means the person is living in my heart, living in my mind. If your lover is not living in your mind and living in your heart, he or she is not a lover. You saw the heart of Hanuman? Who is living in the heart of Hanuman? His lover, right? Hanuman is a lover. Dasirati Hanuman ki? So he was loving Sita as a servant, and loving Lakshman as a servant, and especially loving Ram as a servant. Yes? So the Lord Ram went to Ayodhya and he left Hanuman in this world and Kim Purusha Loka. He left him behind for some purposes which we explained in Ram Nomi. We'll finish this verse. Srimati Kunti Devi felt that type of separation like a fish out of water. She felt such separation from Krishna like a thunderbolt, vajra. And the whole prayer of Queen Kunti, which is, how many verses? I think it's 26 verses or something. The whole prayer she prayed, there's about 26 verses in Kunti Vandanam. The whole prayer of Queen Kunti, and why she's praying, she's offering this whole prayer trying to persuade Sri Krishna, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, to stay with them in Hastinapur. After the battle of Kurukshetra, although the inimical kings were killed, the king's sons and the king's grandsons were still there to deal with the Pandavas. Deal with the Pandavas means to attack them, to fight them. That's the deal they want to do. It is not only the Pandavas who are put into the condition of enmity or envy, but all of us are always in such a condition. So Prabhupada now, in his purport, he has already done what I described, the three-pronged analysis of the Bhagavatam, Adiatmik Vichara, Adibodhika, and Adidaivaka. Adidaivaka is the transcendental level. What is happening between the Lord and his parishads, or his devotees, and Adibodhika is what is the elements of the story, the time, place, circumstance, the exchanges, the elements of rasa, etc. And then the Adiatmika is what does it mean to me? What is the relevancy? Is the Bhagavad Puran irrelevant mythology or mythology, as people some say? Is it ancient history? Because it's Purana, it's Puran, so it's ancient history. This is happening now time. So how does it apply? Is it applicable? Is it relevant? Is it useful? Is it beneficial for little old me, Mr. and Mrs. Punjabi in Delhi, and Mr. and Mrs. Ruski in Moscow, and Mr. and Mrs. Frenchy in Paris, and Mr. and Mrs. Yankee Doodle in New York, Yankee or whatever? Yes, it's 100% applicable to every human being. Therefore, Prabhupada is closing the verse by describing the Adiatmik Vichara. So we should see we should try to understand the Bhagavatam through these three methods of analysis. So he's saying, what Prabhupada is saying, you always talking about the Pandavas. Oh, this is this verse and this story is about the Pandavas and Queen Kunti, and Krishna wants to go back to Dwarka to be with his family. The battle's over and she wants him to stay, and that's it, bus. That's all. It has nothing to do with me. I get the newspapers. Oh, Metro News. Ah, yeah. Metro News. Gurgaon Daily Paper. Yes, this applies to me. This is important. Trash paper. Newspaper means trash paper. Because you read it now and it goes to the trash can. So now Prabhupada's saying, wait a minute. We are the Pandavas are us. Is there some correlation between us and the Pandavas? Prabhupada's saying, yes. See what he's saying in the purport? Do you see that? He's saying, not only the Pandavas 5,000 years ago, who were put into a condition of envy. They were surrounded by envious kings and princesses that wanted to kill them, dethrone them, and take over the rule of the world. Yes? Yes. Are you businessmen surrounded by any envious people? Are you housewives surrounded by any envious people? Are you family members surrounded by any envious people? Yes. The world is full of kam, krodh, lo, moha, matsarya, mada. Matsarya means Sanskrit for envy. There's envy everywhere. There's lust everywhere. There's greed everywhere. There's intoxication and crazy ideas and crazy people everywhere. Mada. And we're in it. We're living in an ocean of greed. We're living in an ocean of lust. We're living in an ocean of greed, anger, lust, envy, madness, intoxication. And we don't become infected by it? If you're living in the ocean, you don't get wet? If you're living in the middle of ocean, certainly you get wet. Yes? Of course. And cities are like oceans of these things. And country and villages are like lakes. In a village, there's also envy and there's also lust. So this is everywhere. So Prabhupada's saying the Pandavas are surrounded by envious people. We're surrounded by envious people. What was the response? It's not what happens to you that counts. It's how you respond to what happens to you that counts. Somebody gets angry and you tolerate it and go away. That's a good response and you don't get much reaction. But you get angry with somebody and you shoot them. And what's the reaction? So then you see how you suffer. So you have to be careful. So they were surrounded by envious people. What did they do? Buy more missiles from America? Do they buy more atom bombs from Russia? and buy more F-18 or what do you call them, phantom jet fighters, and get better satellites to do I spy, because they're surrounded by envious Pakistanis and envious Russians and this and that. No, the Pandavas were heroes. They were Kshatriyas. They were prime ministers. They didn't get by more arrows and buy more chariots. They said, hey, Govinda Damo, Govinda Damo, Dharamadaveti. She cried out, Govinda, Krishnaya Vasudevaya, Devaki Nandanaya cha, Nanda Gopa Kumaraya, Govindaya Namo Namaha. O Govinda Damodar, please stay here, please protect us. The Pandavas are begging for protection. Kunti Rani, she's afraid? If you have Bhima for your son, will you be afraid? If Arjuna is your son, you'll be afraid. Arjuna is your husband, you'll be afraid. You have five sons like that, you'll be afraid. Because in these villages, any family where there's five or six sons, usually that family is like the village gundas. Yeah, that's a fact. Anywhere in UP and Bihar, if there's some father has like six or eight sons, usually that family is the most powerful family in the town. Because they have power. They have a little mini army. I've seen it in India. But so their example is that they're not feeling cocky, they're not feeling proud, they're not feeling independent, although they have all the reasons to be proud and cocky and independent. They have all the money, they have all the power, they have all the strength, all the fame, all the influence, plus their devotees, but they're humble. Trinadapi Sunichinaturi Vasahishana. This is the Pandava's example. Pandava Achar. So then Prabhupada is saying, all of us are always in such a condition. We're always surrounded by enemies. We're always surrounded by envious people. And the best way of living in such a situation, by taking the example, what example are the Pandavas teaching us? What example is King Prithu teaching us? What example is Hiranyakashipu teaching us? What example is Prahlad teaching us? These are examples. This is a book of teachings. How to live the ideal Krishna conscious, pure devotional life and attain liberation, peace, happiness, and joy. This is the whole purpose of the Bhagavatam. So there's so many examples. Don't be like this. Be like this. There's so many examples. There's so many good examples in the Bhagavatam. There's so many good examples in the Bhagavatam of what not to do. Interesting, right? There's many good examples of what not to do. So Ravana is in the Bhagavatam, a ninth canto. It's a very good example of what not to do. Yes? He was lusty for someone else's wife, so he snatched her. That's not a good thing. That's immoral. It's against the law, and will send you to hell. So he lost his life and his kingdom because of his uncontrolled lust. Isn't that the example? He didn't attack Ram for power. He had more power than Ram. He was sitting in Indraloka. Ram was in Ayodhya. He didn't create war with Ramachandra for money or for knowledge. Ravana is a Brahmin. Ramachandra is a Kshatriya. Ravana was a Brahmin from birth. He was Chaturvedi Brahmin. So he didn't attack him because he was envious of Ram's knowledge. He was lusty. Yes? So that's a good example. So the Bhagavatam is like this. So the Pandavas are teaching us an example. Surrender to the Lord, be dependent on the Lord, and always pray to the Lord. So that's what Prabhupada's saying. The Pandavas taught the best way of living is to become completely dependent on the will of the Lord, Sri Krishna, and thereby overcome all difficulties in material existence. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.